From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Thursday, March 24th, 2016. Hopefully, you guys are having a great one out there. You are just one day away from the weekend. Easter is coming up. Can you believe that? I can't believe that Easter is already here on Sunday. Wow. Well, we plan on closing out your week with the bang. Again, it is Thursday, folks. If you want to be a part of today's show, just simply call in by dialing 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. On today's show, we will dive into the Detroit Pistons as they are fighting for their playoff lives right now. They have now won four straight, topping Orlando last night at the Palace of Auburn Hills. Also, Jim Harbaugh. Yeah, head coach of the Michigan Wolverines football team is holding another satellite camp, folks. I kid you not. We'll talk about that. We will also be inviting to the show Deshaun Tate, men's college basketball reporter, producer, and columnist for CBS Radio. He will give us a preview of the night's Sweet 16 games in the NCAA tourney. You don't want to miss that. We will also invite Current Sports PA Brett Cass to the show to bring Brett's bonehead moves, and we will talk about concussions in the NFL. It's a never-ending debate. Again, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. Again, for this Thursday, March 24th. All right, we start with the Big Ten announcing its top winter term academic performers yesterday. And Michigan State had four of the 12 athletes recognized with, get this, perfect grade point averages. I don't think that we talk about academics enough when we talk about student athletes. Now, of those four, three are from the MSU women's swimming and diving team, senior Rebecca Berman, teaching certification, and sophomores Courtney Acock, she is studying kinesiology, and Heidi Serdick in business. The fourth was wrestler Joe Johnson, a senior finance major. Men's basketball had three academic All-Big Ten nominees. Senior Matt Costello is studying social science. Junior Matt Van Dyke is studying agribusiness management, I should say. And senior Kobe Wolinman studying physiology. So congratulations to those individuals. Yes, want to stress the student portion of a student athlete. All right, the Spartan baseball team emerged victorious in their home opener 4-1 against Central Michigan University. Michigan State handed the Chippewas, just really handled them, really, with all four of their runs coming in the second and third inning. Spartan starting pitcher Andrew Gonzalez allowed five hits in his five innings. Closer Joe Mockby finished out the final two innings with no hits and six Ks. That's hot. MSU now moves up to an impressive 15-3 overall record. They will open up Big Ten play tomorrow against Rutgers. Yesterday's softball game at Notre Dame was canceled due to potential for severe weather, and the game will not have a makeup date. In addition, Michigan State's game today against Wisconsin has been canceled, folks. That game will not take place. Michigan State will take on Wisconsin tomorrow and play a doubleheader on Saturday. All right, March Madness resumes action tonight with the South and the East regions. 3-seed Miami will take on 2-seed Villanova at 7:10 p.m. 3-seed Texas A&M will play number 2-seed Oklahoma at 7:37 p.m. 5-seed Maryland versus number 1 Kansas at 9:40 p.m. And to cap off the night at 10:07 p.m., the West Coast tilt, 4-seed Duke taking on 1-seed Big Ten Maryland. The Detroit Pistons got their fourth straight win. Yeah, how about the red, white, and royal blue? Last night over the Orlando Magic, 118-102, the final of that one. Andre Drummond, he was a man. 30 points, 14 boards. And the Pistons, at 38-34, have now moved in front of the Chicago Bulls for the last playoff spot in the East. Detroit has four games remaining on their nine-game homestand and will tip off against the Charlotte Hornets tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. An original six matchup tonight as the Detroit Red Wings will take on the Montreal Canadiens at 7:30 p.m. tonight at the Joe. Detroit currently in a neck-and-neck race with the Philadelphia Flyers for the final playoff spot in the East. So points are at a premium. You can catch that matchup on Fox Sports Detroit. All right, Forbes has estimated that the Detroit Tigers' value has risen to, get this, $1.15 billion this year, ranking 14th out of all 30 major league teams. At this time last year, the Tigers' estimated value was $1.125 billion. The New York Yankees lead the pack at $3.4 billion this year. They have led the rankings, forget this, the past 19 years. Are you kidding me? That's the Yankees for you, folks. And last but certainly not least, Jim Harbaugh is in the news yet again. That's right, Jim Harbaugh and Michigan's coaching staff, they have scheduled a second stop on what they hope will be a second satellite tour. Yes, they are planning on visiting Pearl High School in Pearl, Mississippi on June 8th after visiting Bob Jones High School in Alabama on the 6th. Now, this is all subject to change, though, as the NCAA is expected to possibly make a ruling on whether satellite camps should be allowed moving forward next month. Folks, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in to be a part of the show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, or, hey, again, we have our live stream going on. Leave us a comment on the live stream, folks, and I will read it live here on the airwaves. We have a lot to get to, folks, so let's stop wasting time here. Let's get to the show. Welcome, welcome, welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Always have been. Well, it's pretty rainy outside, cold and rainy outside. We plan on keeping you warm throughout this entire hour, folks. Again, call in to be a part of today's show, 517-355-9527. And I would be totally remiss if I did not mention this on our airwaves, folks. Former big league catcher and popular broadcaster Joe Garagiola passed away. He was 90 years old. He was 90 years old, folks. Man, a legend in the world of baseball. The Arizona Diamondbacks say Garagiola, he passed away yesterday. He had been ill in recent years. Garagiola, he thrived in his post-retirement career as a pretty good baseball broadcaster and fixture on the Today Show. He played 8 seasons in the majors, but generations of fans knew him for his 57-year career. 57-year career in broadcasting, including a 30-year association with NBC. He won baseball's Ford C. Frick Award for excellence in broadcasting back in 1991, and he kept working well into his 80s, serving as a part-time analyst for Diamondbacks telecast. So rest in peace. Joe was certainly a fixture in all of the world of baseball. And I've seen many tributes from national media just talking about his famed career. So rest in peace, Joe. He will certainly be missed. All right. As you just heard, I want to start off today's show by talking about my favorite subject in the sports world. As you guys know, I'm a huge Detroit Pistons fan. I popped out the womb with an Isaiah Thomas jersey on, all right? And right now, the Detroit Pistons are making a lot of headway, all right? They have now won four straight games. The latest, a 118-102 victory over the Orlando Magic. Andre Drummond has been a walking double-double machine. Last night, the man poured in 30 points and added to that total 14 rebounds. The Pistons never trailed in that win. And, you know, still four games remaining. When you look at the schedule for the Pistons right now, still four games remaining in the nine-game homestand. And, of course, when you look at the standings right now, you know, it's crunch time. It is crunch time, folks, to say the least. The Pistons currently sit in the eighth spot in the Eastern Conference. Again, top eight teams from each respective conference makes the playoffs at the end of the year. The Pistons sit at the eighth spot at 38-34. Behind the Pistons, you have the Chicago Bulls at 36-34. And at the 10th spot, you've got the Washington Wizards at 35-36. And the Pistons right now, not far behind the seventh spot with the Indiana Pacers holding it down at 37-33. So when you break this down, folks, right now, the Detroit Pistons cannot afford any blunders. Cannot afford any blunders, folks, because the schedule really toughens with matchups against now Charlotte tomorrow. Then they take on Atlanta. And then a Tuesday matchup with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, of course, with the Oklahoma City Thunder, and then Dallas to wrap up the home stand. Oh, that's tough. That's tough. They've been playing a few lollipops throughout this four-game win streak. But again, wins nonetheless. I really like how this team is playing right now. The Pistons, I will say this, they aren't the best defensive team in the NBA. They still have a few strides to make in that area, and it's the reason why they constantly let teams back in the game. They always do that. I mean, even last night, the Pistons have had their problems defensively as of late, but they were so good on offense against the Magic that it really didn't matter. It did not matter one bit what the Pistons did defensively. Simple as that. Get this. Detroit shot 54% from the field. Talk about hot, right? And 11 of 24 from three-point range. Tobias Harris, what a trade to pick up this young stud. He has been great. Tobias Harris scored 18 points for the Pistons against his former team. Reggie Jackson added 16 points. As far as the Magic goes, Elfrid Payton, he had 20 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists for the Magic. He was unbelievable. Yeah, triple-double. Triple-double for him. And guys stepped up. In lieu of the absence of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Reggie Bullock, both not playing because they were ill. And how about this? The rookie, Darren Hilliard, a second-round draft pick, he made the first start of his career and scored 11 points. And, of course, you know, an added storyline to this matchup last night against the Magic. Of course, you know, Harris came to the Pistons in a February trade that sent Brandon Jennings and Ersan Ilyasova to Orlando. Jennings and Ersan Ilyasova, really not a big factor last night. Jennings, I believe, what he had, I didn't even think he scored in double digits. I think he had 6 points. Ersan Ilyasova scored 8. Detroit jumped out to a 10-2 lead, and it was 22-8 after a three-pointer by Marcus Morris. The Pistons led by as many as 18 points in the first quarter before, again, defensive woes began, and they let Orlando back into the game in the second. The Magic scored 36 points in that period. Are you kidding me? That can't happen. That can't happen against Atlanta. That can't happen against Charlotte. That can happen for certain against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And it can happen as they continue on trying to push for that eighth and final spot in the East. These are crucial games now. And that's the only problem I have with the Pistons. We know that the Pistons can score. We know that, folks. But when it comes to defense, the Pistons just let us down constantly. It's all mental, I think, with this team. Let's invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, whose favorite team is certainly not going to make the playoffs. I'm sorry, Isaac. Isaac Costas. Isaac, welcome to the show, my man. And what's up with Anthony Davis? I know he's going to be having surgery, right? And he's done. He's kaput for the rest of the NBA year. But how you holding up?
Correct, yeah. So actually wrote an article about it. But Anthony Davis has been playing the past 3 years with a torn labrum in his shoulder. So if you ask me, that's first off a sign of bad medical attention given by the Pelicans staff. 3 years, come on, and we could have definitely tanked during any of those 3 years. Just sit the guy out, let him get healthy.
Right.
But at the same time, it's a good sign for the future of the franchise in that he put up, how much was it, 59 points, 20 rebounds against a certain team that might make the playoffs.
Hey, we're at least fighting for a spot, okay?
True.
I don't even know why people watch Pelican games anymore this year.
Great. But anyway, back to the Pistons, though. Pistons, yeah, I think that this team is making the proper strides towards making the playoffs, and half of what they're doing isn't even in their control. The Chicago Bulls are tanking down the stretch. They are just flustered. Every single turn they take does not seem to be the right one, because last night, if you saw the game, Kristaps Porzingis was dunking all over them. Knicks, I think, won that 115-108. Jimmy Butler, still I'm not convinced if he's totally healthy. Derrick Rose isn't what he used to be. So I like the Pistons more than the Bulls, just in terms of the talent that these two teams have.
And is it amazing, though? I mean, when you look at the Chicago Bulls, you know, and Fred Hoiberg being hired as their coach, of course, they let go of Tom Thibodeau. I thought that was the wrong move. You know, they wanted to bring in, the Bulls throughout these past 5 years have been one of the best defensive teams in the league, without a doubt. And they wanted to bring in Fred because they thought, okay, we let go of Tom Thibodeau, who preached defense so much. We let go of Tom Thibodeau. The defense will stay consistent. We need more offense, though. They thought he was going to bring more offense, and that was the wrong thing to do for the Chicago Bulls. Simple as that. So I agree with you. I mean, the Bulls have looked just not like their usual selves, not the same Bulls we've seen in the past with Tom Thibodeau. But hey, yeah, so I do agree. I like the Pistons more so than the Bulls. Wizards, they're a catch-22. Sometimes they're hot, sometimes they're not. Watch out for the Wizards, though. It's gonna be an interesting chase here. But, you know, I want to put something in perspective here, Isaac. The Pistons right now, at 38-34, chasing their first postseason appearance since 2009. And, again, moved a game ahead of Chicago at 36-34 for that eighth and final playoff spot with the win over Orlando last night. Detroit is also only a percentage point behind Indiana for seventh. To put this in perspective, Detroit right now, 38-34. Get this. Last year, the Brooklyn Nets, folks, the Brooklyn Nets made the postseason. They were able to get into the playoffs with a record of 38-44. Are you kidding me? That just puts in perspective. The East has certainly gotten better than the last 2 years. And that's what makes this race so interesting. And the Pistons, they just cannot have lapses. That's the big thing. I'm just worried right now because I've seen the Pistons go on stretches where they play great basketball, but again, defensively, they take plays off. Simple as that. So, hey, folks, what do you think? What do you think about the Pistons? I want to read a few comments here coming from my frat brother Justin Dunn here. Justin is a big, big Russell Westbrook fan. I love Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, me too.
He calls him West Cook. He calls him West Cook. I like that nickname a lot. But he says, you mean West Cook? And then he's from Chicago, to add on to this discussion, all right? And he says the quote, Bulls will snatch that. Don't worry. So thanks, Justin, for weighing in. Again, you can call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And I want to pose this question out there, all right? Because, you know, it's so remarkable. You know, of course, locally, we're talking about the Pistons right now. But I want to shift gears just really briefly here to make you think about something. We've been watching the premier storyline in the NBA all year and fascinated with it, what the Golden State Warriors are now doing this year, right? They're chasing the Chicago Bulls' fame record of 72-10 set back in the 90s. The Warriors are on pace to break that record. It's really remarkable what this team has done. The most entertaining show on the hardwood anywhere in the world. Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, Klay Thompson. I mean, the roster's just unbelievable. And again, they got a win last night over the Clippers. And again, they're on pace. And I do believe, Isaac, that they will break the Chicago Bulls record, that fame record set back in the 90s.
Yeah,
but you know
I
what?
Agree.
But you know what? There's another team that if the Warriors were not having the season that they are, would be dominating the headlines. That being the San Antonio Spurs. They have been so good this year. And, you know, there's one player I want to focus on really briefly here, and I want to pose a question to our listeners and our viewers out there. Kawhi Leonard, Isaac, I believe is a top five player in today's league. He is that good. And he is, and I believe that Kawhi Leonard is, the best two-way player that we have in all of basketball right now. He's a shutdown defender that can pour 30 on you. He's unbelievable. But you know what? Every time I turn on TV, national TV, and turn on ESPN on a Wednesday night or watch TNT with Chuck, you know, Ernie, Kenny, and Shaq every single Thursday night on NBA TNT. And, you know, when they hit the commercial breaks, I see commercials for LeBron James and Kia. I see Steph Curry and his famed Under Armour commercials. I see, you know, Meet the Hoopers, I think it is.
Meet the Hoopers.
Exactly. I see that with Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan, Kevin Garnett and Damian Lillard. I don't see Kawhi Leonard at all, publicized at all. And Kawhi Leonard, again, top five NBA talent right now, who is so humble, so quiet, but just burns you night after night on the hardwood, and you can't do anything about it. I want to pose this question. Is it possible to be a quiet superstar in today's sporting world? What do you think? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Have we ever had a guy who's just quiet, who's just humble, who just goes out there and burns you, but is the face of that respective sport? Isaac, quick thoughts. What do you think?
Is it possible? We're seeing it right now. Kawhi Leonard is a superstar. Like you mentioned, top five NBA player right now. And with his performance this year, I think that he's validated that defensive player of the year assignment that he was given last year over Draymond Green. Moreover, though, his points per game numbers have increased every single year he's been in the NBA. And Tim Duncan, for the first time in his career, has taken a serious statistical decline in per 36 numbers. Kawhi Leonard stepped up to the task. He's creating his own shot. He's the reason that the Spurs have a points differential even better than the Warriors. And Kawhi Leonard is definitely that. Another quiet superstar in history would be Larry Bird, though. That's an example.
Larry wasn't quiet, though, Isaac.
Larry was quiet.
Was a trash, no, one of
no,
the
no.
greatest trash talkers of
wait,
all
wait, wait,
time,
wait, wait.
Isaac. What are you talking about? Larry was quiet?
Read the biography.
Stop
when Marsh
it.
Went mad, I read this book. Larry, the most Stop interaction it. He had in college with his Indiana roommate was seeing if he wanted to go squirrel hunting.
Isaac,
Larry was quiet.
I hear. Yeah. Maybe off the court he was quiet. But on the court, Larry was one of the biggest trash talkers you ever seen in your life. I mean, how many? Just type in Larry Bird fights. You would never see Kawhi Leonard
different
getting
than
into a
quiet,
fight.
Though.
And he was
a fight
he
is
was
different.
Larry Bird used to trash talk every single game. Michael Jordan sat down during an interview with Ahmad Rashad during
I remember.
You know, and they asked Michael, "Who is the biggest who are some of the biggest trash talkers you ever played against?" He was like, "Oh, Larry Bird has to be a near the top of my list, without a doubt." Kawhi Leonard would never trash talk during a game. But this is my argument, though, Isaac. I mean, you brought up, I agree with everything what you said about Kawhi Leonard. But Kawhi Leonard, he's not the face of the league. That's my question here. Is it possible for a quiet superstar to be the face, to be that guy in the NBA, to be that guy in the NFL, to be the man? Because right now it's clearly Steph Curry. And Steph Curry's game is not quiet. Okay, if you bring up the Larry Bird point, Steph Curry is a church boy, you know, off the court. True. I mean, you talk about Steph Curry's family and, you know, your Riley Curry and his wife Aisha. I mean, the Currys are so humble. They're so humble. You got to love them. But when Curry is on the court, the dude's a killer. He's an animal.
He's a mean man.
He is trying to kill you out there. So that's what I mean. You know what I mean? And that's how Larry was.
Fair enough.
You could kind of equate that same thing with Larry Bird. Let's go to the phone line right now. We've got a caller. Dear listener of the show, I just actually saw him out in the hallway. He volunteers here at WKAR. On line one, we've got our dear friend Kirk from Grand Ledge. Kirk, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing fine. I'll just listen to your rant.
I had to get this off my chest, all right? This was weighing heavily on me when I got out to bed this morning, all right? What's on your mind, Kirk?
Well, first of all, I want to respond to what you're talking about a little bit here. And by just saying, who does he play for? He plays for San Antonio. Kawhi Leonard plays for San Antonio. The argument could be made that at one point in time, Tim Duncan should have been the face of the league, but he's this quiet, unassuming guy. The argument could have been made at one point, David Robinson should have been the face of the league, but he's quiet, unassuming guy. I don't think it's a coincidence that they all played for San Antonio.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. He's a product of what Greg Popovich has built there. And you know what? There's also another layer to this argument too, Kurt, before I let you proceed here. I always say, when it comes to the NBA, it's always systematic. I don't know that if you were to take Kawhi Leonard and put him on, let's say, the Philadelphia 76ers, that he would have the type of success that he's having in Greg Popovich's system. I don't know if you could take Steph Curry or Draymond Green and put those individuals on the Philadelphia 76ers, not to pick on the Sixers, but they're so bad, if they could do what they're doing with the Golden State Warriors. I think that's far-fetched. So, yeah, it's Kawhi Leonard and Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker are certainly a product of what Greg Popovich's system allows.
Right. And I the point you bring up in terms of systems and things would segue nicely into a discussion about Deontay Davis and making sure he gets with the right team, kind of like the way Zach Randolph made sure he got to the right team initially, where he got to sit on the bench behind Rasheed Wallace and stuff in Portland and all those kinds of things. But that's not what I called about. I wanted to call and talk about the Pistons.
Yes, go ahead.
And the first thing I want to say about the Pistons is, you mentioned the guy with the triple-double last night.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be an asterisk by that guy's name for triple-double, because I did not know. I learned it from watching the game last night and listening to the announcers. But I did not know, when you get your shot blocked and you catch it back, that's considered a rebound.
So really?
His rebound statistics were inflated by three when Tobias Harris blocked his shot three straight times in a row on one possession.
I didn't know they count that. Did you know that, Isaac? I didn't know they count that as a rebound.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Dig
so
that.
He should get a little asterisk by his triple-double, because anytime you get your shot stuck back in your face three straight times on one possession, there's just something not right there. But anyway.
Right. And that's Elfrid Payton you're mentioning. 20 points, 10 boards, and 10 assists for him. Yeah.
So, anyway. Now, here's the broader picture thing about the Pistons. And I also want to include the Wings on it, because we're in a unique time frame right now where both the Wings and the Pistons are battling for the last playoff spot.
Exactly.
You know, it's been, 26 years since that's happened?
It's been a long time. And of course, the Wings, they have the longest playoff streak of any North American team in sports. So, yeah.
Right. So in essence, with the season winding down, I maintain both the Wings and the Pistons should be in playoff mode now. Every game counts. Every game should be like a playoff game for both these teams right now. And if either one of them come out flat for any game and with a lack of urgency and a lack of effort, then that's a problem.
So true. Totally agree with you, Kurt. Hey, Kurt, great call, my man. Appreciate that.
Take care, Al. Bye.
All right. Again, folks, if you want to be a part of today's current sports, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Isaac, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will talk college hoops. That's right, the Sweet 16 gets underway tonight. We will invite Deshaun Tate, men's college basketball reporter, producer, and columnist for CBS Radio 92.9 The Game. Don't miss that chat and so much more right here on WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, be a part of our airwaves by simply picking up that phone and dialing 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Isaac, how's your bracket looking, my man? I know Sweet 16 is getting underway tonight. And I will say this, I'm proud of this. I got 10 of the 16 teams right in the Sweet 16 on my bracket. So I cleared the South. I cleared the West. I had a bit of a, really a lot of trouble, I will say, in the Midwest. And only got one team right in the Midwest and one team right in the East. How you looking, though?
Let's see. I'm pulling up mine right now. And it looks like I've got a similar amount. Don't have time to count right now. But I like it. Three of my four Final Four picks are still in contention. I like the wave that Texas A&M is riding after that 12-point comeback in 40 seconds. That's
crazy.
The craziest thing I've ever seen in
biggest
college
comeback,
basketball.
Biggest comeback, not just in tourney history, but in college basketball history. Nuts.
So, I like them. I've got UNC going to the Final Four. I've got Kansas going to the Final Four. So, still relatively intact. Although, my champion, as many people predicted, Michigan State, was, let's just say.
What happened on Friday?
I don't know. There was some sort of,
I didn't see that.
Euphemism.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not sure what. They're pushing up flowers.
Yeah, they're not playing basketball. I'll tell you that. All right, let's not knock on image here. But we will get this man's take on what occurred last week on Friday. His name is Deshaun Tate, men's college basketball reporter, producer, and columnist for CBS Radio 92.9 The Game down in the ATL. That's right, Atlanta, Georgia. Deshaun, welcome to the show. How you doing, my friend?
Man, I'm outstanding outside of what you guys were talking about on Friday night. I was just going to say that before you guys. I was going to say, wait, what happened? You mean to tell me Michigan State lost?
Right, exactly. It's so weird right now in East Lansing, you know, because Deshaun, you know, you because I watched the tourney, you know, the rest of the games, you know, on Saturday and Sunday, and I was glued to my TV. But, you know, it felt so weird that there wouldn't be, you know, an opportunity for Michigan State to go to a Sweet 16 that there was no Michigan State men's basketball game on. So it's a bit weird around here right now, Deshaun. A weird feeling going on around here in East Lansing. But I want to ask, because we haven't gotten Tate's take, if you will, on Friday's MSU loss to Middle Tennessee State University. I mean, what'd you think of what occurred?
Honestly, I just think that I think that was going to happen to anybody that played MTSU on that day, to be honest. Well, maybe with the exception of one or two teams, obviously everybody's talking about North Carolina and Kansas, and I believe that either one of them are vulnerable and could have been vulnerable in that same exact spot. But Tennessee, the thing about it is MTSU, they just weren't missing shots. It didn't really matter what it is. I'm not really sure if Izzo, who's one of the better adjustment makers, especially in the second half, could have really done anything, because you're in a situation where we looked like we were ready to, you know, rebound, had a few guys, almost a handful of the whole team out there on the floor that was ready to rebound, but all of them sitting there trying to figure out who's going to pull the ball outside of the, you know, from underneath the net and take it out and get up and down the floor. So they didn't get on transition as much as I would have liked to see Michigan State do. Of course, you got to give credit to MTSU. But in addition to all of that, it kind of reminded me a lot. Everybody talks about the Weber State back in 95 when Weber State was a 15 and Michigan State was a 2. But it also kind of makes me kind of feel like the George Mason thing all over again back in 2006, where Michigan State was the very first victims of their magical run. So I know that people in East Lansing are a little disappointed about everything that transpired this year. But in the same token, I mean, yes, it was a good year for Michigan State, of course. But when you're just kind of looking at the whole landscape of everything that happened, I like to think sometimes Michigan State fans are a tad bit spoiled sometimes with assuming they're going to get to the Final Four every single year.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and that's what Tom Izzo brings to this team. I mean, because they've had so much success under his reign. Looking forward to next year now, Deshaun. I mean, how good do you think this team will be next year? Because when you mention guys like Miles Bridges, Cassius Winston, possibly Josh Jackson, Nick Ward. I mean, this is clearly already, even if Josh Jackson does not commit to the Spartans, this is already Tom Izzo's best recruiting class. How good do you think these boys will be next year?
I think that they'll be really good, and for the main reason, obviously, being that Michigan State will have Tom Izzo on the sidelines. I think that'll be the biggest thing, but there will propose some challenges. Will they be talented and one of the most talented teams in the country with or without Deontay Davis's departure, who's been getting quite a bit of notoriety around some NBA scouts that seem to have fallen in love with him as of late. But outside of all of that, I think they'll be good. I just don't like to put too much emphasis and pressure into thinking how good they will really be, because at the end of the day, they're still freshmen. Are they talented freshmen? They're ranked around the country, sure. But we don't know what the outcome will be. How do we know that, you know, one of the guys, especially with Ward or whomever it may be, or any of the guys for that matter, won't pan out to be like a Labissiere from Kentucky this year? I mean, I just don't like to put too much stock and hold too much weight into what freshmen will do, because we haven't seen them play at this level, of course. I still like to think that they'll do well because Tom Izzo is, you know, he's obviously the one coaching that team. But if they can get Josh Jackson, of course, I like to think that they'll do well. But don't hang your hat so much on getting Josh Jackson or not landing Josh Jackson, for the simple fact that they're still going to have a good team, a really, really good team regardless.
Deshaun Tate, men's college basketball reporter, producer, and columnist for CBS Radio down in Atlanta, Georgia. All right, Deshaun, how many Sweet 16 picks did you get right, my friend?
I've got 10.
Okay, you're right with me then. Okay.
I'm doing pretty well for myself, at least I like to think, considering, you know, I did have Michigan State. That was the bummer, of course, winning it all or whatnot, like a lot of people did. But outside of that, the teams that I had that lost and aren't in my Sweet 16, I didn't have them, you know, going much further, from that standpoint. So I'm actually doing pretty well in my bracket so far. I've got Kansas and Maryland, which I think is a very key matchup, because everybody talks about, oh, Maryland, they disappointed. They didn't have the year people expected for them to have. But in the same token, we're talking about a Maryland team for a good reason, I believe. Not only do they have who I personally think is the best point guard in the country in Melo Trumbull, but on top of that, I really believe, you know, they were, what, top three ranked in the country in some people's minds, the number one team preseason entering. So between them and Kansas, I had Miami and Villanova. I tell you what, this Oregon-Duke game is going to be a very, very good matchup. But Oregon has not gained my respect yet. They'll have to win tonight in order to do so. And I had Texas A&M and Oregon along with Gonzaga, Iowa State, and North Carolina as well.
Deshaun, what's your take on the showing thus far for the Big Ten? Again, Maryland, Indiana, and Wisconsin all still in the running right now for a possible national championship bid. As far as, you know, the dust settling on that first week of the NCAA tourney, how do you think the Big Ten has shown itself or not shown itself so far?
Well, it depends on really who you ask, on how much stock people have really put into Iowa. You know, I didn't really think that Iowa would be that team. I thought they would definitely be very disappointing, and they did disappoint me. And not only just – I didn't even have Iowa getting out of the first round, because if you look at how Iowa fared out last year and entering into this year, you know, you kind of seen the same thing as they were going into tournament play. But outside of that, Michigan got in, and that helped, and they won a game. But, of course, Michigan State lost early. Maybe that could have been – substitute for how well Wisconsin have done, because I wasn't sure what to expect out of Wisconsin, except for the fact that they're going to play Wisconsin-type basketball. So I think they could have done a little bit better. Obviously, Michigan State, you know, one of the main reasons why I feel like they could have done better, but I think that they also could have done worse, because Wisconsin was an uncertainty. In addition to Maryland, obviously, who you really weren't so sure about, you know, getting this far deep into the tournament, and at that, it's only the second weekend of it. So considering all things, I think they've done okay. We'll learn a lot more about all three of the teams that are still currently playing. And Indiana could obviously be one of those teams as well that, you know, could possibly make a much further run. Of course, people in Bloomington and Tom Crean, he definitely needs that to solidify his job, which I think he did so against Kentucky last week.
Deshaun, did the Big Ten tournament help anybody? Because when you look at things, the first round of the NCAA tournament, Michigan State and Purdue, two teams who played in the Big Ten tournament title game a week prior, less than a week prior, I should say, bowed out in the first round. But you look at a team, for example, like Indiana, who didn't even make it to the Big Ten tourney weekend, they now find themselves in the Sweet 16. Is there any positive outcomes for, or I should say positive outlooks for what the Big Ten tourney brings to a college basketball year? Because for me personally, I got to say it, Deshaun, I see no value in it whatsoever.
And I know you're one of those people. We spoke a little bit about that on one of your previous shows, and I think it does. It helps people. You know, the thing is, teams like Maryland, teams like Indiana that are still playing have actually reaped the benefit of losing early, and I know some people aren't fans of that. I'm not the biggest fan of it, but they kind of, it seems like they've taken a page, for lack of other terms, out of Tom Izzo's book, and losing early, of course, not purposely by any means, by any stretch of the imagination, but by losing early and preparing themselves for what matters the most. And it kind of seems like that could possibly be what has shaken out here. And we could possibly be seeing that that has come, you know, to be factual if Maryland moves on past Kansas. Because have we been talking about Maryland beating Michigan State in the conference tournament and moving on and maybe going on to play, or Indiana even, you know, going on to play in the conference championship game? We could be talking about a risk of injuries. We could be talking about guys just, you know, being tired or just, you know, just being loaded down extra games that maybe don't, you know, kind of having the same kind of outlook as you have. So in that sense, if it helped anybody, I think it helped those two teams to prepare at realistic national championship runs. And I hate to say that about Wisconsin on the outside looking in, maybe not at a national championship run, but certainly a deep run, if not nothing else, for all three of the teams that remain in the tournament, not the Big Ten.
Deshaun, who's your favorite right now to go all the way?
I think the consensus probably has to be Carolina for me. I know that Kansas, if you take a good deep look at Kansas, everything Kansas does works and implements the four seasons if you pay attention. So in 2008, we saw Kansas make it to the national championship game, obviously win it all over John Calipari's Memphis team, and they hadn't been back to the Final Four until 4 years later. There goes that elephant in the room, increments of 4 years. They go back in 2012. They play John Calipari again, but instead of at Memphis, they play in the national championship game against Kentucky. They lose there, and they don't go back to the Final Four again. Here we are 4 years later in 2016. We could be looking at the exact same thing for Kansas. I think this is Kansas' time, but I think really what it'll come down to is going to be North Carolina. I think Carolina's my favorite. They have kind of the target, the big target on their back to say, you know what, we have to get it done. Because regardless of being a blue blood or not, we are still North Carolina. We still have all those banners hanging up in the rafters. We have to show that we're still Carolina. But think about it like this, though, Al, real quick. I know I'm getting a little long-winded.
No, you're fine.
In order for college basketball to kind of come back around full circle to the college basketball we grew up watching, because, you know, obviously the ratings go down a little bit and things of that nature, but in order for it to get back and draw people's interest the way it used to be, it may have to take a Duke, North Carolina. I know it sounds kind of, you know, it's futuristic, but it may take a Duke, North Carolina national championship meeting this year to kind of draw people's attention back in.
Really? So you do think that as far as the popularity of the overall tournament, you think that it's gone down over the years?
I think it definitely has, obviously, because you got so many of the teams as of late that have made Final Four runs and people don't necessarily want to see. And a lot of the teams that are playing don't necessarily come from a financial standpoint that are going to really sell. So when you're talking about VCU making it 1 year, you know, we didn't know this year who could be that team. Hell, for all we know, it could be Stephen F. Austin that's going to be playing tonight or tomorrow for that matter. So from that standpoint, you know, Butler played twice, 2 years back-to-back in 2009 and 2010. So, you know, I think that is good that we don't really have any Cinderellas in the tournament remaining anymore. That should draw more people to watch him this year because it's all big-time teams. I mean, hey, Syracuse is a 10 seed. They barely made it in, but they still hold that name. North Carolina's still there. Duke is still there. You know, Oklahoma team who may not present, you know, as much of a household name, but they still have a house, one of the best household players in the country, maybe the best in the country, although I know people in East Lansing don't necessarily like to hear that.
Right.
But it does kind of bring those names out. I don't think there's any more Cinderellas that can do nothing but help unless you call Gonzaga Cinderella. I don't think they can wear that slipper anymore for sure.
I will say, though, Deshaun, last year's NCAA tournament had the highest average of viewership in 22 years. I don't know what's to be said about that, and I haven't looked at what the ratings were during that first weekend of this year's tournament. So I don't know. You may have a case in point there, but and I also want to bring this up because there was a game throughout that weekend that really caught my eye, and of course it was the VCU versus Oklahoma game. And the reason, you know, why I was so intrigued was first off because of this whole Wooden Award race between Buddy Hield of Oklahoma and Denzel Valentine of Michigan State, who, again, isn't playing right now. He went out very, very early in the tournament. But it was an 85-81 win for Oklahoma over VCU. A game in the first half of that matchup that didn't see a lot of Buddy. You know, it was pedestrian to say the least. But then in the second half, something clicked. And Buddy put up 29 points in the second half. Do you think Buddy pretty much, it's his award to lose right now as far as National Player of the Year goes? Again, that award will be given out during the Final Four weekend out in Houston. But do you think it's Buddy's to lose right now, Deshaun?
It's definitely Buddy's to lose. I don't really think there's really much that Buddy can do to not solidify himself as claiming that award right now, especially considering things that transpired with Denzel Valentine, as you mentioned earlier, on not playing anymore. So that just gives us more opportunity to see Buddy Hield. And of course, I like to think maybe Bryce Johnson could probably be in a position to win it. Maybe. I don't know how realistic that is, but when you think of North Carolina, you think of more of a team concept versus what you do of Oklahoma. And they've got good, you know, role players that surround Buddy Hield and Isaiah Cousins and Jordan Woodard Cousins and Ryan Spangler up front. So they definitely do have, you know, those pieces around him that also make him look really good. He's got the ball in his hands very, very often. But one thing I'm concerned about is two things. Number one, I think that Lon Kruger is vulnerable from a coaching standpoint of being outcoached by someone in this tournament. And will Buddy Hield be prepared for longevity? Because here we are, teams have an opportunity to have a whole week to prepare for Oklahoma, a whole week to prepare for Buddy Hield, hoping that Lon Kruger isn't running him into the ground. Teams will eventually start making adjustments on Buddy Hield. I'm really concerned about if those role players are good enough to kind of put the team on their back when he's not having such a good game as he did last week.
All right, Deshaun, tonight we've got Miami versus Nova, Texas A&M versus Oklahoma, Maryland and Kansas, and Duke versus Oregon. What do you think is the most intriguing out of those out of that rundown? Excuse me.
As far as intriguing, I think is obviously the Kansas versus Maryland matchup because we're looking at two teams that started out preseason ranked in the top five. Outside of that, something that I'm intrigued to know about is you know, the matchup between Oregon and Duke. You know, Oregon is the team. They're going to have to show me exactly why, as I said earlier, that they deserve that number one seed. And on top of that, you know, Oregon in the Pac-12 got shown a lot of love coming into this tournament. Oregon being the number one seed, they're not just going up against a regular old team. They're not just going up against a Maryland team. I mean, there's other teams that look really, really good. But still, when you're going up against Duke, that's a whole nother playing field in its own. I remember talking to you a few months ago. And we were talking about Duke losing games, being on a losing streak. They lost a back-to-back game at home at Cameron, which doesn't happen very often. That was to Syracuse and to Notre Dame. two teams that obviously know them because they play in the ACC, but the thing of it is that I told you you do not want to count out Coach K. He is an absolute mastermind, and he's got really good players. Forget about all this, don't have Emil Jefferson and all this other crazy stuff. You could throw that out the window. Emil Jefferson did not just happen to get injured last week. They've been without him for a really long time. One thing that does concern me is Marshall Plumlee being the only big in the middle, and he's not really that outstanding from my eyes from a standpoint of offensive skill and talent. But outside of that, I can definitely see Oregon having some troubles with just Duke in its own. They cannot afford to read the name on the front of the jerseys that reads D-U-K-E.
Very true. All right, Deshaun Tate, men's college basketball reporter, producer, and columnist for CBS Radio 92.9 The Game out in Atlanta, Georgia. You can follow him at Tate's Take Sports on Twitter. Deshaun, thank you so much for your time, my man. Outstanding.
Thanks for having me, Al. Good job.
All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's Current Sports by inviting Current Sports PA Brett Cass to the show. That's right. Brett's bonehead moves is right around the corner. Also, Jim Harbaugh, another satellite camp. I kid you not, folks. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Less than 10 minutes left in the show. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We know how the week can be, folks. It can be very stressful at times throughout the work week, going to meetings and events and trying to, you know, meet deadlines. We know how it is, all right? So we love to take the edge off the work week by bringing you a fluffy segment, if you will, all right? And we invite each and every week to the show Current Sports production assistant Brett Cass, who does one outstanding job here with us. And, you know, he has a segment here on the show called Brett's Bonehead Moves, where he takes a look at the sports world and picks out who is a bonehead. Pretty simple, right? Here we go.
That's right, you clumsy bonehead.
All right, here we go. Brett's bonehead moves. First off, Brett, my man, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, Al. Thanks for having me on.
Happy Thursday. What you got
for
us today?
Happy Thursday. First up, I have EA Sports is the first bonehead of the day. So they released EA Sports UFC 2, and they had a lot of different, I don't know how the coding works of video games, but they had different celebrations people would have when they win, and one of them is a sign of the cross. Well, one of the fighters, Khabib Nurmagomedov.
It's a tough name. I'm looking at it now. That name.
He's well known as a Muslim. I guess he avoids fighting during Ramadan. And apparently his celebration also includes him doing the sign of the cross. And he did not take very kindly to that. So reached out to EA Sports on Twitter saying, fix this. They ended up sending him an apology message. And he ended up, you know, posting it and saying, you know, it's all good. You know, mistakes happen. Just the next update will fix it. So
for Khabib, they had him making the sign of the cross, and he didn't like it. He didn't want that.
Not at all. No, he wants to. He's well known. He's well known as a Muslim, and he embraces his faith. So he was kind of upset with them not really understanding that. And UFC, I guess he's known throughout the UFC community as being Muslim. So they maybe should have seen that one coming.
So he didn't want it in a video game. Huh.
He didn't know, and he wasn't terribly mad once they said they would fix it. Okay. He wasn't super angry about it, but
so bonehead equals EA Sports.
Exactly,
here.
Yeah. And the second one, I know we kind of have some disagrees. Mine is kind of the fans and the media for making this such a big deal. But LeBron James apparently unfollowed the Cavs on Twitter, and he was asked after the game the other day by a reporter about that unfollowing.
Ron, you may not like this one, and I'm not thrilled asking it. I'm obviously trying to diffuse this a little bit, but it appears that you unfollowed the Cavs on Twitter today, and it's caused quite a stir. Why did you do that, or what would go into that?
Next question.
You've had 38 assists tonight. That's a season high. Is this something you can take forward to the next game?
I'm done.
All right, thanks, guys.
Wow.
So
LeBron, a little salty there.
Yeah, apparently it's part of his preparing for the playoffs. He starts to unfollow. He also unfollowed, I think, 13 other accounts which belong to NBA and Cleveland Cavalier reporters to try to prepare for the playoffs. But my opinion, I think the bonehead is the fans and media for getting so worked up. Like, once someone unfollows an account on Twitter, everyone freaks out.
Right.
Like, it's social media, it's Twitter, relax. I really don't think it's all a big deal.
Yeah, and I don't know why. This is my take on it. I don't know why LeBron just didn't address the question. You know,
that is weird. No, I do agree with you. Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, why didn't they say, yeah, so what? It's social media. I can do what I want with my account.
He wasn't very kind to the reporters there, and he walked out the next question, too. It wasn't a good look for LeBron.
That's weird. Just answer the question, man.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, but
it just shows you the world we live in today with social media. You know, it's just like, you know, why the fact that that question was even asked is a joke to me.
The fact that it had to be asked about his Twitter account.
Right.
Yeah, it should be about the game and about how he plays. But
exactly.
Moving on, still on social media, ESPN, so they had the baseball game in Cuba with the Tampa Bay Rays playing Cuba. And ESPN tweeted a picture outside of the stadium in Havana, Cuba, said, "Meanwhile, outside the stadium in Havana." And it showed, you know, it showed poverty outside the stadium. Well, people started responding with, "Meanwhile, outside of Citi Field, meanwhile, in Detroit." And it was just the same impoverished areas right
Why
outside the stadium.
Why would ESPN do that?
I don't know. It was supposed to be a diplomatic trip, and they made it
I hope whoever is managing ESPN's Twitter account has been fired by now. That's terrible.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. And last but not least, Spartan Draymond Green took a Snapchat, which is a video, driving down the highway going 118 miles per hour, and posted it, then quickly deleted it. But people were very upset with the fact that he was driving. It was on a big highway with cars all around, swerving in and out.
Fast and Furious?
He was driving in the fast lane going 118 miles an hour, and then had another tweet with him just driving, and it was a video of himself, not knowing whether that was 118 miles an hour or not, but it just looked like a lot of reckless driving and using the phone while driving. So
he's on his phone Snapchatting. Going 118 miles per hour while other cars are on the road.
Yeah, first mistake is going 118 on the highway. Second mistake is using your phone, videotaping it, and posting it online.
Oh, so, man, I tell you what, man. His athletes just don't understand sometimes how you know, social media has opened the door now that if you post the wrong thing, it could go haywire. So. Yeah. Brett, those were outstanding. That might have been your best one yet, I think.
Really? Oh, well, thank you.
That was fantastic. Brett, how can people follow you on Twitter and follow your work, my man?
Follow me on Twitter at Brett, B-R-E-T-T, cast with a K, K-A-S-T. And you can also listen to, we got a radio show that I host on Impact Radio, 88.9 FM, Sunday mornings from 10 to 11. We talk sports. I don't know. We're not going to have a live show because it's Easter this week, but we'll figure it out from there. So.
Are you going home, seeing the family for Easter?
I am going home. Yep, I'm going home tomorrow.
Fantastic. Yes, Easter. Gotta love Easter. All right, well, I'll throw this story out there, and I want you guys to comment, you know, in the 24 hours leading up to our next show tomorrow on Friday at 1 o'clock. Jim Harbaugh in the news yet again. Jim Harbaugh, Michigan's coaching staff, has scheduled a second stop on what they hope will be another satellite tour. Yeah, they are planning on visiting Pearl High School in Pearl, Mississippi on June 8th after visiting Bob Jones High School in Alabama on the 6th. Really brief thoughts here, Isaac. What do you think about Jim Harbaugh again hosting yet another satellite camp?
Yeah, my take's the exact same as it was last time we were talking in Florida or Alabama or wherever. He's totally within his rights. Until the NCAA prohibits these types of camps or whatever, which I'm not even convinced they should do, I've got no problems. But shout out to Pearl. That's close to the hometown.
Oh, there you go. All right. And again, I totally agree. If the rules allow it, then hey, why not? Again, folks, Current Sports TV airs tonight. DVR it if you don't stay up that late. But 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV, I will sit down with the assistant coach of the Everett boys basketball team and Magic Johnson's point guard during the state championship team for Everett back in the 70s, my man Dale Beard. It was a fun episode. Don't miss it. Current Sports TV tonight on WKAR-TV at 10:30. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Much thanks to Deshaun Tate of CBS Radio down in the ATL. We'll be back at it same time, same place next week. Take care. Well, tomorrow, I should say, not next week. Take care and be easy, people.